Good morning. For this morning's prelude, just to tap into some of the energy that we got last night at our Ruby Jubilee celebration, we're going to be singing the song Across the Universe. Okay, thank you. We're going to be singing the song Across the Universe, and we'd like you to sing along the chorus with us. And the words go simply, Jai Guru Deva Om. Jai Guru Deva Om. Nothing's going to change my world. And we repeat that three times. And this is the John Lennon song. So when it comes in, just listen for that part. Join it. Well, it's well done.
Including the UUA Legislative Ministry in Sacramento. Jeanette, our administrator, asks you to please, if you have not yet picked up your directories, she has them, pick them up from her so that you will save us all the postage, or we will charge you postage and handling. Mary, you have an announcement, and as you come up for this announcement, let me also share that the Funny Duddies will meet at Holly's house on Raymond tomorrow at 9:30.
Turn.
You'll find them inside your order of service. Well, it is a pleasure to introduce to you the Reverend Dori Summers. Some of you are new here and don't know her from the time that she spent as the minister of this congregation. I met Dori sometime in the mid-70s when she showed up in Southern California to coordinate the service committee and ended up joining my congregation in Studio City and was also a frequent contributor in the pulpit. We have a little gag that she shared last night, which was that my sermons give her whiplash from agreeing. And I always chastise her after her performances because she is a poet. And I find it extraordinarily annoying that she can do in two stanzas and 3 minutes what it takes me 18 minutes to say. A talented poet, talented human being, and a dear friend over many years, the Reverend Dori Summers.
I didn't get it. so I continued to use a manuscript for almost 5 more years. And so finally I discovered a little technique called the mind map. And now my 20-minute sermon is on a piece of paper about like this, and it looks like this. The true storytelling for me comes in poetry. And so I want to share one little lesson for those of you who sometimes don't feel quite up to what you'd like to be, those of you who aren't quite as capable as you might wish you were. And this is called my liberation story. It's in book number 2 called Pineapple Sage. A little piece of sculpture. There it is. A little piece of sculpture. Straight to my desk, that was once a foot-long piece of 2x2 grid wood lumber. Some years ago, I whittled away at that piece of board and looked at the essence of the wood express itself. I liberated the beautiful truth resting in the simple thing. And now it serves to remind me that beauty and wonder abide in each of us and in all that is, just waiting to be called forth and set free. This is my liberation story. As a child, I got the message loud and clear that I was no sinner. When my children came along, however, I discovered the joyous acceptance little ones give their parents' melody. I boldly sang old favorites and lullabies to them as we rocked in Grandma White's old bedroom rocker. Later, I sang with them, bouncing along in our red Ford Bronco. Songs like Charlie and the MTA, The Cat Came Back, and after a glass of wine, I even sang with colleagues around the piano. Old Sunday school hymns, fond of your memories. And one Sunday morning, I actually sang alone in church. Amazingly, the notes were true. My voice was sweet and the congregation loved it. But I still heard echoes of taunting laughter from the grown-ups in my midst. Today, with my hair turning silver and my pipe a little rusty, I sing only in my car, alone. It crossed my mind as I was preparing a presentation. It's too bad I can't sing. And that's when liberation happened. I listened to my muse, my heart, my oversoul, and added my newly awakened consciousness to my faith's power. Here it is. They said I couldn't sing. They said I couldn't sing. I know they loved me. Yet they said I couldn't sing. I had no song. Their laughter chastened me. My voice amused them when I struggled with a tune or notes went wrong. My sister's tones were sweet. Her music welcomed. She, thinking I couldn't sing, shared poetry. I went from memorizing words to writing, not yet understanding words to set me free. From time to time, a nonsense song or ditty, a lullaby or hymn would set me singing. But always, poems germinated, blossomed beneath my pen, their strong life lessons ringing. When truth embraced me, I learned I am spirit expressing beauty. Old messages were wrong. I need not yearn for melodies to warble. My very life is beautiful. I am.
Something else Dory and I share. This is our time for the sharing of food collection. That the children, if present, and the adults, if capable, will bring forward to share with the hungry and homeless in the larger community.
Thank you. morning, everyone. There's just a small group of children here today.
Much intellect.
it's fortunate we never find a human with a goldfish wand. Would you join me, please, in reciting the affirmation of what passes for unison in the order of service? Love
is the doctrine of the church, the Christ of truth is the sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve human beings, thus to be covenant with one another.
Over the 40 years that this congregation has existed, it has waxed and waned in size and strength and in depth. It has turned from time to time to professional leadership. Some of it board certified Unitarian Universalists, some of it non-board certified. And during one of those times, you turned to a Presbyterian. Yes, it's true. A representative of a real religion came here. And it worked. And it is my pleasure to introduce one of the people who has been so important in the history of this congregation, who brought to it his skill, his activism, his intellect, and his passion, the Reverend Bob McLaren.
Well, thank you, and good morning. And thank you for the invitation to join in the wonderful celebration of this anniversary. Behind the scenes, I found a little celebration of my own, remembering the six, almost seven, wonderful years served as your part-time interim pastor, even though I was still connected with the Presbyterian Church. Almost fortuitously, it seems, my older brother, a professor of biophysics at Berkeley, joined the Unitarian Universalist Church back there in the mid-turn of the 1800s. He left the Presbyterian Church to join New Hope. And then he urged me, not knowing where I was headed, to read up on your literature so that I might understand why he made the transition. Because he said from the very beginning, the beginning of the Reformation in the 16th century, Presbyterians and Unitarians were very close and on the best of terms. The Crown Prince of Transylvania, the land of Dracula, which my brother loved to remind me of, he helped to establish the Unitarian tradition as one of the four acceptable invited religions in his country. He established Unitarians and then found himself having to deeply regret the denominational conflict that began to arise all over the world as the Reformation took its own toll. He held firmly to his affirmation that as a Christian, he was open to all faiths and was trying to fulfill the statement of Jesus, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God." Now, leap forward to 1893. Here we find a group of Unitarian leaders in Chicago, meeting with representatives from other faiths, not only Presbyterians or generally Protestants, but Catholics and Jews, Buddhists, Hindus, Confucians, Muslims, to build a framework for a parliament of world religions. They had high hopes, and those were tragically battered by social realities and political conflicts. Labor management disputes, racial and other disruptions, which along with World War I and then the Great Depression, World War II, and the interminable warfare that broke across the nations, not only in Europe, but through the Middle East and on into the Far East, all seemed to doom the hopes of many who sought peace and concord along the ecumenical front. But in the 1980s and early 90s, the dream of reestablishing that parliament that everyone thought had been lost forever was revived. I attended their first meeting in 1993 in Chicago, where the planners thought perhaps 100 or so attendees would make it a successful beginning. 8,000 people showed up from around the world asking to become members of the parliament. 8,000. They had to go through all the hotels in downtown Chicago to find one for them. But it worked, and it was a wonderful experience. In South Africa, 6 years later, visions of openness, people of all faiths, were rekindled. I had the good fortune to be there and to meet and invite the Dalai Lama to follow up our meeting there by coming to Cal State University here in Fullerton, which he did. And there is a plaque in the Arboretum now with his picture on it, my name on it, and other people who are on our committee. And that stands under a Bodhi tree. Now, some of you know what the Bodhi tree is. It's a member of the fig family, but it is the unique specimen that lives 4,000 to 5,000 years. The original Bodhi tree under which the first Buddha sat when he received his enlightenment is still in India, still flourishing. And now we have such a Bodhi tree, which I presented to him on the stage with President of the University, Bill Gordon. That tree will be there to welcome everyone from around the world for as long as that university stands. You and I, and many others who believe that religious harmony can be achieved, may prove to the world that those who strive for peace, the healing of wounds, the restoration of love, as our guiding principle, will prevail. That is my hope. That is my prayer. Thanks for listening.
Why not? And
And I would argue that this congregation over these past 4 years has consistently asked why not. When I was here, we might have been called the mole people. We were living or working and worshiping downstairs in the library. And we asked questions like, why not rearrange the seating? Well, a little thing like that actually made a difference. Why not make other kinds of changes? Why not let people know that we're here? This question was raised by me years ago when I began going on radio and television on behalf of Unitarian Universalism, and some of our colleagues, I don't know some of them that I'm talking about, kind of looked down their nose and said, well, we don't do that. And I said, why not? Well, now more than ever, we need to ask why not. At a time when the forces of darkness, of brainlessness, mindlessness, ignorance, and stupidity seem to be in the ascendancy, when at least a third of the candidates of one of the parties for president don't believe in evolution, we need to ask, why not make our presence known? Why not witness what we believe? Now, we come here for a lot of reasons. Certainly the social ones are very important. We come here for community. We come to share our values and beliefs, our aspirations with one another. But we also need to be here and just say, why not provide a place for our children to learn about different religions and other ways of living in the world? Why not provide a place where people of all sexual orientations, genders, races, colors, creeds, and be together? Why not provide a place where we can feel safe and we can dare to question and think for ourselves? In 1822, Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter in which he said, I doubt that any young person now living will not die a Unitarian. What happened? And maybe more than ever, we need to ask, why not? Can we say that about 100 years from now? Why not have all those who worship the Unitarian? I'm very grateful for the times that I've been able to be here with you. It's wonderful to be your acquaintances here today. I encourage you to continue your important work in this community. Finally, why not continue to ask? Why not?
Try to keep it to a sentence. This is a time to share really information about our family, our church family, where we would like the attention, the cards, the letters, the covered dishes, the prayers of the congregation directed. There will be a memorial service today to honor the life and memory of you're all invited to stay after our reception today. It will be at 2 o'clock. For the joys that we share, for the concerns that we share, and for all of those joys and concerns we've chosen to keep inside our hearts this morning, let's follow the bell into a quiet place and be there for a few moments with one another. our living tradition. As the UU ministers here know, that every year at General Assembly, there's something called a service of the living tradition that reminds us that we are not isolated in time and space. We are a part of something that is greater and grander. While each individual has intrinsic and inherent worth and dignity, we are a part of something that really does have a story. And so many Unitarian Universalists feel disconnected because it feels sometimes that we are just individuals or we are just individual congregations, and we are as a vase of flowers. We come and we bring our flower and put it in a vase, and there it is while it is, and eventually it withers, the petals drop, and congregations wax and wane with our lives, and there's nothing truly permanent. We don't have a story, we think, like those real religions that have hymns and harps and eternal certainties. We don't have eternal certainties. We do have hymns. No harps in this congregation yet. We do have hymns, but they are not eternal hymns. We have remarkable, changeable hymns. Hymns that that reflect our philosophy and reflect the fact that we do change in this world, that we are affected by what goes on around us. So our hymn book changed, and all of the Lord became man as humanism influenced Unitarianism. And then the man became man and woman. But that didn't scan so well, so God was brought back. But at least not Lord. And then Father and Mother and Earth and Sky and Sea, and our hymns keep changing. Peter DeVries, in his brilliant satire on Unitarian, Unitarianism, the Mackerel Plaza, talked about how in the chancel there was a Calder Mobile that symbolized the willingness to be blown about in whatever the currents of change were. Well, it's true, and I'm proud that we respond to the world, that we respond in the poetry and the metaphors that touch our hearts and don't simply repeat old formulas that no longer touch us. If the old formulas touch us, then share them, because what we are in search of is a search for truth. Not the capture of truth, not turning truth into tablets of stone, because tablets of stone eventually turn to powder. More like a tree, more like a flower that is a part of its environment. We're, as a denomination, kind of easy to mock, and we kind of enjoy being mocked. Every time Garrison Keillor does a Unitarian joke, I get 6 calls, because we're just pathetically grateful that somebody noticed us. The same thing happened, in fact, during Watergate and the scandal over the Pentagon Papers. When the Beacon House published the Pentagon Papers, the Nixon administration sued and tried to subpoena our financial records. We were pathetically grateful. Nixon was noticing us. We must be doing something. And then, you know, there was that fear that, well, if they could subpoena our records, they'd find out who we were and terrible things would happen. As soon as they looked at our books, they gave it up because they understood. They were more depressed about it than we were. They said, there's nothing here to attach. I mean, we're just, let them go. It's very easy to make fun of us. I've made a fair living doing it. And many of you know, certainly Derek does, that I take a Marxist view, well, Marxist Billy Graham view of Unitarian Universalism. Normally when I talk about Marx, it's Groucho, but this is actually Karl. And normally when I talk about Billy Graham, it's the one that wears Judy stand up. It wears that kind of shirt. But now I'm talking about the evangelist. Karl Marx said that religion was the opiate of the people. And Billy Graham said you could get high on Jesus. And so for many, Unitarianism is a methadone program for people coming off of orthodoxy. But it's much more than that. We are people who are on a spiritual journey. All lives are journeys. And we believe in a destination and a destiny beyond simply our own lives. We believe in trying to deal with making this world a better world. This world, not some other world in another place, in another dimension, but this world. We believe that what we choose and what we do is important and it makes a difference. We believe, even though we are small in number and even though these lights that are ourselves are brief, that these lights which are ourselves are important and they're part of a great stream and a great wave. It's nice in physics, as I'm sure your brother knows, that light is considered both a particle, individuals, and a wave. Some physicists came up with the term wavicle, which I kind of like myself, but that's probably an ethnic thing. It's a nice wavicle. We are both particle, we are individuals, and we are waves. We are part of a spiritual journey. All of us here, over space and time. Abraham went out of Ur looking for a future. Moses came out of Egypt. Peter came out of Palestine. Paul out of Asia Minor. Slaves were taken out of Africa and brought to this country. And today the big question is about bringing Hispanics out of the shadows, gaze out of the closet, and honoring people of every origin as we come together to form a community that is based on we don't have to think alike, to love alike, and we even don't have to love alike to be together, to work together, to inspire each other, to be connected to this beautiful and fragile and sometimes broken world. Every once in a while somebody says that I don't want politics in here. That's not true. We have a tradition of politics as Unitarian Universalists. As Unitarians and as Universalists, caring and acting on the important issues of our day. In many ways, Unitarianism was born in that proclamation of religious tolerance in Transylvania, where for the first time in Europe, a government said congregations can call and dismiss their own clergy. It is not in the interest of the state to run the church. People should be free to worship. That is a moral, an ethical, a religious, and a political doctrine. Unitarians, along with Presbyterians and Methodists and Congregationalists, were for the disestablishment of the Church of England. Yes, folks, we are all the disestablishmentarianists, against whom the anti-disestablishmentarianists were anti. That was a strong political position and statement. We have in this country had 4.5 presidents. I count Thomas Jefferson only as half. He was a fellow traveler, not a card-carrying member. But we had John Adams, John Quincy Adams, Millard Fillmore, and McKinley as presidents of the United States. Taft, William Howard Taft, as 5.5. McKinley had the first bathtub. It was the only clean administration ever really in Washington. Taft was another story. We have been in the forefront of the important issues of this country. Abolitionist, the creation of what became the Red Cross, the labor movement, women's rights to vote, the civil rights movement, the human rights movement, the gay rights movement, Unitarians and Universalists and Unitarian Universalists have been part of the important struggles for liberty in this nation and for peace and peaceful resolution of disputes across the world. This is politics. This is religion at its deepest and most important. In some ways, it's much easier to deal with politics because it has real consequences and ramifications. I'd much prefer to get into a knockdown, drag-out fight about politics and something that counts as opposed to how many angels can dance on the head of a pin and the classic religious controversies. Incidentally, the scholastic answer was all of them. That's true. I can't make this stuff up. What we have done, and maybe one of the most important things that Unitarians have done and Universalists have done for America, was the creation of free, secular, public education. If a pluribus uni means anything, taking the many and making a nation, it has to be based on free, secular education. And that, too, along with all these other things that are in danger today that Derek talked about, that, too, is really in danger today. And Unitarians and Universalists need to be active and awake in all of the issues. Everything that Brad mentioned in terms of the disparities of income, the disparities of rights, the abridgment and encroachment of rights, while we are still fighting to free others, we've maybe unaware of the rising temperature in the waters in which we live and swim. Unitarian Universalists believe that religion is not about belief. It is about what we do. Our faith is that our individual sparks of light, our particles, make a stream, make a wave, and we are part of that wave, bringing light and warmth and reason to a world that often sits in darkness, in despair, and is missing reason all too often. We believe that we make a difference. This brief flash of light that is our lives makes a difference. 40 years, it's a wonderful number. 40 years wandering in the deserts of Orange County. Thank you, Del. You know something? We have some of our biggest, deepest, strongest congregations in the most conservative areas. Because you know something? We find out that we need each other. We don't get to break up over some silly fight. We need to work together and model together what we believe about peaceful disputes, peaceful resolution of our disputes in the world, in our community, and in our own church family. We need to honor reason and compassion along with living lives of passionate involvement in our world. Oh, we are a faith. We're a faith that is not about belief, but a faith that is made flesh through our actions. What we do, our actions, our beliefs made flesh, makes a difference in the lives of every person here and in the lives of our greater community. We don't make all the difference that we can. We don't make all the difference that we should. But we start here. And we charge up each other's batteries when we feel down, when we feel low, when we feel despair. We calm down each other's rage when we are furious at the world. We encourage each other when we want to just back away and not be involved anymore because nothing's going to change this world. You're going to change this world. You are the snowflakes. And I am so proud to be here and part of this because you have changed this world. My closing words today are attributed to St. Francis of Assisi. They are ancient words, first published in 1912 in French. So you have to understand that St. Francis was kind of the Kurt Vonnegut of his time. Everything on the web kind of got attributed to him. He probably didn't write this, but if he had seen it, he would have asserted ownership, as I think we all would. God, make us instruments of your peace. Where there's hatred, let us, O love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is discord, union. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. Grant that we may not so much seek to be consoled as to be the consolers, not so much to be understood as to understand, not so much to be loved as to love. Would you please form our closing circle?
Go now in peace. Go now in peace.